On this 26th day of January 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 18, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 18. 18? 18. Jnanam geyam parigyata. Trivadha karma chodana. Kadanam karma karteti. Trivadha karma sangraha. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. Purport. There are three kinds of impetus for daily work. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower. The instruments of work, the work itself and the worker, are called the constituents of work. Any work done by any human being has these elements. Before one acts, there is some impetus, which is called inspiration. Any solution arrived at before work is actualized, is a subtle form of work. Then work takes the form of action. First, one has to undergo the psychological processes of thinking, feeling, and willing, and that is called impetus. The inspiration to work is the same if it comes from the scripture or from the instruction of the spiritual master. When the inspiration is there and the worker is there, then actual activity takes place by the help of the senses. The sum total of all the constituents of an activity are called the accumulation of work. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, this is 18:18. So this is a very nice analysis now of how we do things, because actually our life is simply made up of different actions. We're doing this one thing and not another. So an analysis of what causes us to perform a certain activity is crucial, because when you analyze, say, what we do in bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness, we're still doing so many things. It's not just the sitting and thinking. It's not just the kind of sedentary kind of yoga that you read about in chapter 6, or that's so common. There are a whole bunch of things to do. And what makes us do one activity and not another? Because we want to try to act in such a way for our ultimate benefit. The beginning of the whole Gita starts when Arjuna asks Krishna to please instruct him. Yakshreyakshanishtitam bruhitanme. How can I act in such a way for my ultimate benefit? You know, I mean, this should be a question of all people. Because if we act out of ignorance, we don't know what the best course of action is, then it's practically certain that we'll not achieve our ultimate benefit. So these are the different constituents of action. Knowledge, the objective of knowledge, and the knower. So one thing that people often forget is the objective of knowledge. If you recall in chapter 13, Arjuna, this is one of Arjuna's questions. He wanted to know jnanam and gyanam. He wanted to know what is real knowledge and what is the final goal of knowledge. People sometimes think there is no final goal. It's just this ever-increasing accumulation of knowledge, and that's how it works. But Krishna doesn't adhere to that philosophy. There's a very distinct goal of this knowledge. And the goal ultimately is Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth. The final source of all being, of all of the creation, you know. And he describes in chapter 13 in terms of the supersoul, mostly. You know, how the supersoul is because they're speaking of the knowers of the field, the individual knower and the super knower. So, but for most people, that's not their objective of knowledge. This is an analysis of action in general. And he'll say, and he'll explain that all of these things are conducted by the different modes. You know, people have a goal in mind that they work for, but it's a goal that's tinged with the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. And so that goal ultimately proves to be self-defeating. You know, it's self-defeating activity. So the knower. So we are the knower, and we're also the doer, right? We as the soul, in one, we're certainly the knower. And in this context, you just to analyze these five elements of action. This is another way of looking at it. In text 14, the place of action, in this case the body, the performer, that's the karta, or the living entity, the senses, which are the tools that you act with, and the different kinds of endeavor, how you will certain things to happen according to how you perceive your best interest, and ultimately the supersoul. Without understanding these five kinds of action, then we're acting under the complete control of the modes of nature, and we stay entangled within this material world. So understanding these different elements is very important.
What's the difference between the knower and the doer, the karta and parijata?
They're the same, but they're performing different kinds of functions. You know, the knower is definitely the living entity also. And in this case, the karta, as explained in text 14, is also the actor. But and one is in the capacity of knowledge, and the other is in the capacity of will. So you see, these three functions, if you remember one thing, remember the thinking, feeling, and willing. This is a function of the mind, of the consciousness. And we do that all the time. Now, often in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to change our thinking, feeling, and willing. Ultimately, the goal of the whole process is to engender a certain feeling, if you think of it. The feeling is love for God. And the actions take place on the impetus of that feeling. But in the meanwhile, our thinking, feeling, willing is absorbed in this matter. We're thinking of ways that we can acquire more things and enjoy more things. We're acting on that basis, right? And we're feeling either happy or distressed whether we get those things or not, according to the contact with the senses.
What is the order of these things? It should be feeling, thinking, and willing?
There may not be a complete order, but it's thinking, feeling, willing. Yeah, sometimes it's just feeling and willing, right? A spontaneous reflex action. There's not much thinking. Yeah, but the thing is, the human beings have a capacity to think and to will in such a way that's not necessarily as your gut reaction, as you feel. You see, feeling simply is you know your reaction to your situation in the material world. The animals feel, birds feel. You know, they feel afraid, they feel hungry. You know, they feel like they want to mate. Right, the feeling is always there. So, human in a discipline way to achieve a higher end, you want to think. With your intelligence, you want to learn of the goal that's beyond just your immediate sensations. And then you want to will. You know, you want to will to do it on the basis of this intelligence. And then gradually your feelings change. Your feelings change. Just like in Krishna consciousness. You know, you come in contact with, the perfect example is the story of Dhruva. You know, he felt angry. He felt like he wanted to get a kingdom greater than his, not only his father's, but his great-grandfather, even Brahma. And that was his motivation for going out in the forest. You know, he didn't really have any, you know, deep idea about, you know, the ultimate truth or anything. He was simply feeling and willing. But because he was such a great soul and he contacted Narada Muni gave him a process by which his feelings would change. Right, and he willed it. I'm going to get the kingdom, and he chanted the mantras, the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He performed severe austerities. That's where the will comes in, you know, to overcome obstacles that may be not so pleasing to the mind and the senses for the higher goal. He thought his higher goal was the kingdom, but ultimately his feeling changed in contact with. The transcendence in the form of the mantras and the deity and his meditation.
Ultimately, the goal is to feel Krishna consciousness. Feeling Krishna consciousness.
You can look at it that way because what is the fifth goal? You know, what is the parama purusharta? Prema pumarta mahan. It's prema. Now, Prabhupada would always translate this word as devotional service, not just you know love of Godhead. He would sometimes talk about it like that. But the point is that at that point, all your activities in a spiritual body, or in the body we have now, which is spiritualized, will be informed by that love. Just like a mother or anybody who has a strong feeling towards some other soul, their activities naturally conform to that, right? They're acting in such a way that it will increase and fulfill that feeling. You feel protective of the child. You feel that you want to please the beloved, and so you act in that way. You see, so the feeling produces the, and the thinking is, how can I do it? But without the knowledge of the Shastra, we remain wrapped up in these feelings that are affected by the modes of nature. Our whole consciousness is in the modes of nature. So, what knowledge are we going to have of the ultimate goal of life? How are we going to use our senses in the service of Krishna, in the process of yoga, to achieve this ultimate goal of knowledge gain? All of that fits in here. But there are also, he will explain, there's knowledge in the mode of passion. There are workers in the mode of passion. Your senses can be also saturated with the mode of passion. We learn that from 14th chapter and the 3rd chapter also. So it's really a question of purification. And then it becomes spontaneous. Your thinking, feeling, and willing are completely in tune with Krishna. He also has his thinking, feeling, and willing. Right now, we're ignorant of it or we're fighting it. The whole idea is to get in tune. That was the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was out of tune with Krishna's willing, his desire. Right? He was fighting it. So when he agreed, Kadashe Vachanam Tava, I will do as you say, that was the perfection of his thinking and feeling and willing. You see what I'm saying? It all can be thought of in terms of this. Okay, any questions on these? Krishna will explain each of these things as in the next subsequent verses now. Okay. Jnanam karma cha kartacha.
Jnanam karma cha kartacha.
Tridhaiva guna bheditaha. Prochite guna sankhyani. Yatavat trinutanyapi. According to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of action. Now hear of them from me. Purport. In the 14th chapter, the three divisions of the modes of material nature were elaborately described. In that chapter, it was said that the mode of goodness is illuminating, the mode of passion, materialistic, and the mode of ignorance, conducive to laziness and indolence. All the modes of material nature are binding. They are not sources of liberation. Even in the mode of goodness, one is conditioned. In the 17th chapter, the different types of worship by different types of men in different modes of material nature were described. In this verse, the Lord says that he wishes to speak about the different types of knowledge, workers, and work itself according to the three material modes. So let's go on. Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam.
Sarvabhuteshu yenaikam.
Bhavam avyayam ikshate.
Bhavam avyayam ikshate.
Avibhaktam vibhakteshu.
Avibhaktam vibhakteshu.
Tajnanam vidhisatvikam.
Tajnanam vidhisatvikam.
That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. Purport. A person who sees one spirit soul in every living being, whether a demigod, human being, animal, bird, beast, aquatic, or plant, possesses knowledge in the mode of goodness. In all living entities, one spirit soul is there, although they have different bodies in terms of their previous work. As described in the 7th chapter, the manifestation of the living force in every body is due to the superior nature of the Supreme Lord. Thus, to see that one superior nature, that living force in every body is to see in the mode of goodness. That living energy is imperishable, although the bodies are perishable. Differences are perceived in terms of the body. Because there are many forms of material existence in conditional life, the living force appears to be divided. Such impersonal knowledge is an aspect of self-realization. So there's a word, the Mahatma. It's a common word. It's an English word by now, But many people don't realize what it means. Krishna makes it very clear, what Mahatma is. It's pretty much synonymous with sadhu in this context. And so the Mahatma is like this broad-minded soul, someone who's taken shelter, who is always focused on the spiritual energy, Krishna's internal energy. So that broad-minded vision unifies. You see the unifying factor in everything. Whereas the mode of passion, the vision and the mode of passion is always dividing. Enemies, friends, pleasure, pain, this is profit, this is loss, you see. Whereas the soul in the transcendental vision, with Brahman vision, is seeing the oneness, seeing that we're all spirit souls. We're all part and parcel of God. So why should I feel any enmity toward one and friendship toward another? Just like Krishna says, Samoham Savabhuteshu. I am equal to all. Now, as people relate to me, I relate to them. That's another thing. But as far as Krishna goes, God is equal to everyone. It's our different activities in relation to Him, or lack of relation to Him, that causes us to be more or less covered by material energy and to suffer. You see? So this kind of vision, to see the spiritual nature of everyone, is transcendental. Here he says it's in the mode of goodness. When it's perfected, one sees not only this individual soul, that everyone is spirit. It's not that difficult to understand that. What do we share? You know, there's so many differences between us in the room. We have different clothes on, we have different bodies, we have different ages. Everything is different. But what is that essential oneness? We're all conscious beings. You know, that's what we have. Everything, all of this other stuff will change. It may even change very quickly. We'll certainly change our clothes between now and tomorrow, hopefully. but I mean, and so many things change over time, right? But ultimately, from birth, from the little baby child to the 85-year-old person, they're all conscious beings. So when we see on that level, and we act, we relate to others on that level, that's the mode of goodness. That's the unifying mode. It's explained in the fifth chapter, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmane Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapakecha, Pandita Samadarshana. So this word pundit means someone who's wise, who's learned. He sees a learned and gentle Brahmin, a dog eater, an elephant, you know, on the same level. He sees Pandita Samadarshana, seeing the same. So this is a very important element of transcendental knowledge, is to deal with everyone on the basis of their being conscious beings, not on the basis of their relative, you know, condition in the material energy. So that's what's being spoken of here. And says, see what it Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, he references the seventh chapter here, that we as living beings, it's not just that we're all conscious beings, but we're conscious beings part of Krishna. In other words, the fact that aparaya mitastvanyam prakritam vidyame jiva bhuta mahabhav yedam darbate jagat. So this is Krishna's energy. We're not just conscious beings, we're also conscious beings in related to that one supreme being. Now that ties us all together, you see, in a very personal way. Everything is ultimately personal. The vision, you know, the analytical, scientific, reductionist vision of modern science is always analyzing everything into impersonal forces. Even, I used to dabble a little bit in psychology. I never studied it, but I used to read about it a lot. And, in those days, back in the 60s, Freud was more prominent, and Jung, and these philosophers, psychologists and psychiatrists. But since that time, it's been 50 years almost since, I was interested in that or spent some time with it. Drugs have become so much more prominent, the manipulation of the brain chemistry. That seems to be where the consciousness lies, I mean, we do this little chemical difference, and the person's personality changes, or you get a little knock on the head, and some brain, cells die, and then your whole everything changes. You can't do this. So it seems to be that the brain is the source of consciousness, and if we can change the brain, we can affect it with chemicals or surgery. Therefore, we can affect consciousness. But that's a totally materialistic view of consciousness. The whole idea, probably was, remember this last year or so, he was so much fighting this. Life comes from life, doesn't come from matter. To believe that everything arises up from matter, That we ourselves as persons, consciousness, personality, everything that goes in, ultimately, that all of that is due ultimately to admittedly complicated interactions of molecules and chemicals. You know, this is the vision of the asuras, the demons. Krishna says in 16th chapter, Asatyam apatishtam te jagadahu anishwaram aparaspada sambhutim kimanyat kamahoitikam. What else is there, you know, besides this attraction and repulsion of different molecules that has given rise to everything? There's no Ishwara. There's no supremely conscious being from whom everything else emanates. Rather, it's all just coming up from the undifferentiated chemical slime, you know. That's the whole idea. That's why Prabhupada, you know, was really, no, we didn't descend from the monkeys. No, that's not, it's not an evolution, it's a devolution. Brahma is the first being and we come down, you know, we're all, you know, we come down as different Prajapatis or progenitors, you know. This is the whole idea. So, ultimately, this kind of vision, seeing the spirit, irreducible spirit in everything, is a very important step towards seeing, oh, that spirit is part of the Supreme Spirit. And that Supreme Spirit is a person. And so we are, our personhood really relies in our consciousness. The body and the senses are the, you know, external manifestation. They will eventually go, but our being conscious beings will never end. That's who we are eternally. And so, you know, seeing the world in this way is an important discipline. To see the spirit everywhere. And, you know, and to draw out whatever we can in terms in our own life and others, this awareness. And Srila Prabhupada spent so many, you know, hours and weeks and years trying to light that spark of seeing the spirit, not the external matter. So that this kind of vision is so important. Any questions? Appears to be
this, divine. This verse could be a fault for the impersonal, is the avibhaktam part. Avibhaktam vibhakteshu.
It seems to be divided, but it's not divided. There's a oneness.
it seems like the avibhaktam is undivided. Vibhakteshu, even, but it appears to be divided.
Yeah, this comes up in the 13th chapter too. You know, the super soul is apparently divided, but he's actually one.
But okay. In this case, Prabhupada is not talking about
the super soul.
About individual soul.
Yeah.
But I've seen some people say it's actually the idea of undivided is the undivided principle of the spiritual principle behind all this. The same spiritual principle is appearing in different divided, but it's the same principle. That principle is one solid principle. It's not.
Well, you have to tread carefully. You know, we're into a, you know, oneness and difference. You know, definitely beta. You know, difference and oneness. But very clear from the very beginning of the Gita, natveva aham jatanasam, that never was there a time when Krishna did not exist as an individual, nor we ourselves as individuals, and we'll continue to exist as individuals forever. But there's a oneness in our nature, and ultimately in our reference or in our relationship to Krishna. That's the oneness. All right, let's go on. Pritakvena tu yajnanam.
Pritakvena tu yajnanam.
Nana bhavan pritakvidhan.
Nana bhavan pritakvidhan.
Veti sarveshu bhuteshu.
Veti sarveshu bhuteshu.
Tajnanam vidirajasam.
Tajnanam vidirajasam.
That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body there is a different type of living entity, you should understand to be in the mode of passion. Purport. The concept that the material body is the living entity and that with the destruction of the body the consciousness is also destroyed is called knowledge in the mode of passion. According to that knowledge, bodies differ from one another because of the development of different types of consciousness. Otherwise, there is no separate soul which manifests consciousness. The body is itself the soul, and there is no separate soul beyond the body. According to such knowledge, consciousness is temporary. Or else, there are no individual souls, but there is an all-pervading soul, which is full of knowledge, and this body is a manifestation of temporary ignorance. That's Mayavada. Or beyond this body, there is no special individual or supreme soul. All such conceptions are considered products of the mode of passion. So you can see that... And, you know, people are very passionate about this too. The idea is that one becomes thoroughly convinced in this way, and he lives on that level, you know. I mean, the most the most obvious manifestation of this is that one, you know, national consciousness, racial consciousness, you know. And I mean, forgive me, but this is the background I come from a long time ago. You know, the Jewish soul, you know, we have the Jewish soul. The idea of soul music, you know, that this is the black people had this. And maybe they don't hear it anymore, you know. Soul food. In other words, we have this food that feeds our soul, you know, and the others don't have it. You know, I have a Jewish soul, and no one can ever else have a Jewish soul. It's a complete ignorance. I'm sorry, it's total ignorance. But people, you know, they fight wars on this basis. The whole Nazi thing was this, you know, racial consciousness. The idea that we are the Aryans. You know, they misappropriated so much. Even the swastika. The swastika, you know, has been forever spoiled by, you know, at least for the next 100 years or so, because of this misuse. You know what swasti actually means? Suasti means be well. You know, be very well. In other words, good fortune to you, right? And the symbol, the swastika, is meant to spread that kind of good vibe. You know, this good feeling to everyone.
Do you still draw that on festivals in the front?
Yes. It's a bona fide, you know, Vedic symbol. Misappropriated. The very word Aryan. You know, so but what was the idea? Oh, yes, we have the body. You know, the body was the big thing. It's eugenics. They you know, annihilated so many people. And but the blue eyes and the blonde hair. And you see how ignorant it is. All based on this idea. This is the German soul, Wagnerian. You know, and we'll make war and we'll be exalted. You see, that's based on that. And you have the same thing today. You have the same thing going on today. It's vision in the mode of passion, and it creates division. This is the age of quarrel. It's the age of Kali. It means that so many people are seeing in this way. You know, the haves and the have-nots. You know, and this class, that class, this caste, that caste. Right, all on the basis of where you're born. Born means body. You know, the basis of whatever body you take, that's who you are. You know. I mean, we're sitting here, most of us, you're probably raised in a more pure culture, but we're only sitting here because Lord Chaitanya and his followers completely blew that out of the water. Lord Chaitanya exalted Haridas Thakur from a Muslim family, said to be outside the Vedic culture, as a Namacharya, you know? He's not a Muslim, you know? That Muslim, Christian, all this business is just it's just a designation. The whole thing about bhakti is beyond the designation, beyond the definitions of body, old, young, white, black, all of this business. Simply, who are you? Who am I? That's the first question. Who am I? Jivera Sorupoi Krishnera Nityadas. The swarup, the actual form of our soul, our form and function, is to be an eternal servant of God. And the greatest conception of God is Krishna. The all-attractive personality of God in full and six offices, that's another discussion. But the idea is that is the declaration of Krishna himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So on that basis, everything changes. Because if that's your identity, then you're going to work on the basis of that identity. Right? There's so much confusion today between, you know, sexual identity. This way, that way, you know, it's ridiculous. All based on the body. Body. And these poor, they have this another aspect of this horrible vision. I am the body. This impossible ideal of beauty for the young girls. These poor girls, they starve themselves. They're anorexic. They get thinner and thinner and thinner. Never thin enough. It's an extreme expression of this. I can't be, you know. So in a society where it's, you know. The content of your character, you know, I don't know if that rings a bell for you. That was, you know, Martin Luther King. You know, he had some of that understanding. It's not the color of your skin, it's the content of your character that counts. That's exactly our philosophy. The color of the skin, you can substitute any other bodily feature. It's your understanding, your activities, your qualities according to, you know, so many verses in the Bhagavad Gita, your purity of thought, of action. That's what counts. So, you know, this kind of knowledge, this knowledge in the mode of passion, and which means a certain vision that you have, because you see according to your consciousness. You see and you act according to your vision. So the mode that you cultivate is all important, critically important. So now Krishna is warning us that this causes division. This is, tinged by ignorance. When the goodness becomes more tinged by ignorance, you get into passion. When you get more and more ignorance, then you've been predominantly ignorant, and we'll see what that causes. All right. Any questions on this mode of vision and knowledge? Yattu kritsna vare kasmin karye saktam mahaitukam atat vata vadalpam cha tattama samudaritam. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all in all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. Purport. The, quote, knowledge of the common man is always in the mode of darkness or ignorance, because every living entity in conditional life is born into the mode of ignorance. One who does not develop knowledge through the authorities or scriptural injunctions has knowledge that is limited to the body. He is not concerned about acting in terms of the directions of scripture. For him, God is money, and knowledge means the satisfaction of bodily demands. Such knowledge has no connection with the absolute truth. It is more or less like the knowledge of the ordinary animals, the knowledge of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Such knowledge is described here as the product of the mode of darkness. In other words, knowledge concerning the spirit's soul beyond this body is called knowledge in the mode of goodness. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation is the product of the mode of passion. And knowledge concerned only with keeping the body comfortable is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So, knowledge in the mode of ignorance, it sounds like an oxymoron. You know what an oxymoron is? Self-contradictory term, and it truly is. So this idea of being attached to one kind of work, it's kind of, what comes to mind is the donkey, but I call them ass, the donkey with the blinders. It's like one point. Okay, well, I've got one thing to do. Just to go straight ahead, and that don't bother me with any conflicting theories. Let me just go. That's the kind of attitude you find of people who are not even open to any of these kind of philosophical points. So there's one definition of this famous definition of madness. Of craziness, is to keep doing the same kind of work and expecting a different result. So it's very close to this, because the mode of ignorance produces madness, produces, gross illusion. And that's what happens. People, they don't know any other way. They're simply so conditioned and habituated to acting in a certain way that they're at a loss, because they don't have, they haven't opened the channel to have any higher instruction, And this is another aspect of today's so-called culture. It's a complete cacophony, There's nobody recognizes any authority. People listen to those who further their own preconceptions. So you have all kinds of crazy theories that you have a constituency for. Millions of people, are believing, forgive me, maybe I should turn the recorder off. That 19 Muslims flew those planes into the towers and knocked them down. They all believe that. There's no evidence for it. We'll discuss this later if you want. There's no evidence for it, but they've been brainwashed into believing that, and that's become, a central axiomatic principle for their life, their fears, their aspirations. So many things. You see what I'm saying? So this is the mode of ignorance. If you don't have access to real knowledge, then you're sure to be misled. It's very simple. Misled by your senses, misled by cheaters, misled by your imperfect conclusions, intelligence. And then that's the way you think about yourself in the world. And you're doomed. So the only, shining this light, there's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam. When Krishna came, He's pushing back the darkness, right? Here he's enlightening Arjuna, and through Arjuna, everyone who's open to this. And when he was there, his pastimes, he was annihilating the demons. He was speaking to Arjuna, speaking to Uddhava, and through so many sages, he was a force for enlightenment, truth, knowledge, goodness. But Krishna left the planet 5,000 years ago. So the question is, well, where's that light going to shine now? How are we going to have light means knowledge, you know, real knowledge for our benefit? Krishna, Swadhamo Pakate, Dharma Gyanadibi Saha, Kalo Nashta Drisham Esha Puranako Dunodita. This is very pertinent because the Nashta Drisham means the vision is destroyed, vision is obscured in this Kali Yuga. So he's saying that in this verse that when Krishna went back to his own Dharma, he left this world and returned to Goloka, taking with him knowledge and true religion, jnana and dharma, dharma jnana to be saha. So for these people, kalo nashta drisham, these Kali Yuga whose vision is obscured and distorted by these modes, this Bhagavat Purana, this Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen like the sun to give knowledge. And the Gita is simply confirming the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam and the Gita are completely at one. Just that the Bhagavad Gita is much more concise, and it's a summary of all the same knowledge. So, but especially the Bhagavad Purana, so much detail, Krishna's Leela. I like to leave a little time also to read something of Krishna's pastimes. So that can give us real knowledge. And here, what did we just... the knowledge that, you know, in the mode of ignorance. It's very difficult because people are so... Once you get, focused on one kind of theory and you've invested so much in it, you become angry if it's challenged. Because this philosophy, it really undermines the entire basis of materialistic life. It's very revolutionary. Because what is materialistic life is based on the concept that we're the body. And that sense gratification, not only the gross senses, but also the mind, that kind of pleasure is where real happiness lies. And even though we have evidence in each of our lives that it really doesn't lie there, we're always thinking that, over the rainbow, that we'll find that place of real peace and happiness in this world. If I just get a little more money, if I just get away from this person, or I meet that person, right? Or I just get this, and time goes on, and it's always, the carrot in front of you. You never get there. So, how are we going to get away, out of this dark bubble of illusion that we've committed to? There has to be something that penetrates, and that can be the light of the sun, like this knowledge from the Gita or the knowledge from the Bhagavatam. But there need to be. Persons who are living it and who can transmit it in every generation. And that's why Prabhupada was so eager not only to write his books, but to further the growth of the society of devotees who get this knowledge, absorb it, and then become lights unto themselves, for the benighted souls. Because people are suffering out of ignorance. This is a basic principle of our philosophy. Out of ignorance, people don't know how to act for their own benefit. They perform sin, activity against the laws of God and nature, and that produces suffering. So if we at all want to help ourselves and others, we should give real knowledge by which this activity can be transformed into devotional service. Okay, any final questions or comments? We are going to read some Krishna Leela tonight. Okay. All right. So we'll go to Prabhupada, but we're not finished yet.